Thank you very much for the introduction. So over the weekend, I got an email from Latham asking if I can give a talk today, and then I noticed that I have 2 days of preparation. So I did my best, and then here I am. So hopefully, I will not disappoint you in that respect. So today, I will talk about holographic scattering from quantum error correction. This is based on something very fresh from archive. This is based on a paper I did with Alex May and Jonathan Source. And so this paper actually has multiple results, both in quantum information theory and quantum gravity. And this talk, mostly I will focus on quantum info part. But as for quantum gravity part, I would like to emphasize that Jonathan Source, who used to be a Stanford PhD student, now he's a postdoc at MIT. Jonathan did great work on this quantum gravity aspect. And it's actually, Jonathan will be giving a talk at IAS on December conference. So if you are interested more on a geometric viewpoint of our work, you can also check it out. Anyway, let's get started. So let me begin by reminding you of the ADS-CFT correspondence or the holography. So ADS-CFT correspondence just says that quantum gravity, like gravity theory, living on some negatively curved spacetime, like this hyperbolic space in ADS space. So such a quantum gravity is somehow holographically realized on conformal field theory, living on the boundary of ADS space. So in a very, very plain word, whatever happening on this negatively curved spacetime, it has some quantum mechanical realizations. So here I wrote down some three people sitting there and chatting with each other or discussing physics or whatever. But these three people somehow has a holographic realization on the boundary as a quantum mechanical system. So that's essentially the statement of holography. Now, in recent years, we have learned that this notion of space-time in ADS, negatively curved space-time, is actually a sort of emergent notion. Namely, these things can emerge from quantum entanglement. And I guess the most notable example is the so-called Ryu-Takanagi formula, which basically tells us how to compute quantum correlation or entanglement in an explicit manner by geometric quantity. Namely, if you are interested in the so-called entanglement entropy of some subregion A, then all you have to do is find a minimal curve which covers this region A. Now remember that because of the negative curvature, it's actually you can go faster if you go through the bulk. So in this case, these blue lines are shorter than this boundary line. And then somehow this formula tells us that if you want to know the entanglement entropy, all you need to do is just to measure the length of the curve. And but the beautiful thing about this formula is that if you have multiple disjoint boundary systems like A and B, sometimes these minimal curves or minimal surfaces connect two boundaries. So it's called connected wedge. So it's like a wormhole connecting two boundaries. And in that case, we actually know that there's a lot of quantum entanglement between A and B. Namely, you can sort of distill large number of Bell pairs or EPR pairs between A and B. So anyway, so you can learn all sorts about space-time by just studying quantum entanglement on the boundary quantum mechanical systems. Now, this beautiful but mysterious feature of ADS-CFT correspondence can be actually concisely captured by the simple tensor network toy model, which I and my collaborators proposed a long time ago. And but essential idea and the most, I think, surprising fact was that this mapping from the bulk quantum gravity physics to the boundary quantum mechanics works like a quantum error correcting code, which I will talk about more later. Okay, so essentially these are like nice conceptual improvement of our understanding in the past like 10 years and so on. But so in this talk, I would like to sort of revisit this problem of holography or ADS-CFT correspondence by focusing on a certain very, very simple, in some sense, very simple and fundamental setup. So imagine that we have an area space, so this cylinder, and up direction is a time, okay? Then on the boundary, you have a normal, you know, flat space, and on the bulk, you have negatively curved space-time. Then let's imagine that you have multiple particles on the boundary. In this example, there are three particles. They are sitting on the boundary. And then we let them travel to the center of the bulk. Then eventually they will meet together at the center of the bulk, and then they may collide and then scatter to the off to the boundary. This is a normal scattering process. Now, in principle, when these three particles meet together, they may interact with each other, right? And then in principle, because they will be in the same location in the same space-time, so I should be able to, let's say, go there and then apply any unitary transformation on these three particles, like U, 1, 2, 3, in this example. This is perfectly normal, right? I mean, or you guys can jump into ADS space and then we can have a meeting there, and then that's perfectly legal. But ADS CFT correspondence says that this physics of holographic scattering has, of course, a holographic realization with the boundary quantum mechanics. Then how this interaction among particles are realized on the boundary quantum mechanics? That's the question I want to focus. And if you think about this question carefully, and then you probably notice that this is actually quite a difficult problem. And it's actually much more non-trivial than you might at the beginning think. And my answer I want to convey to you is that interactions actually emerges from quantum error correction. But we will go slowly, step by step. And in the first part of my talk, I would like to review a very recent important work by Alex May. It was done like 3 years ago. Okay. Okay. So in a nutshell, what Alex proposed is that holographic scattering process, like particles come together and then scatter off, this process actually requires quantum entanglement, in a sense that the quantum entanglement are hidden in the boundary conformal field theory. He has demonstrated this idea by discovering the following important conceptual puzzle, which I call two-particle scattering puzzle. So to be concrete, let's imagine that we have two particles sitting at C1 and C2, these are boundary locations, and then they go to the center of the bulk, and they may interact with each other. And then they scatter off to the boundary again, and then they will be revealed at R1 and R2. Now here, for some technical reason, I have placed these output points, R1 and R2, in a kind of twisted manner. But this argument is actually quite generic. It's the puzzle can be demonstrated most vividly with this configuration. Then this process is perfectly normal from bulk perspective. And now, holographically, how can we realize such a situation in the boundary? And on the right-hand side, I have put the boundary figure where light rays essentially go into the 45-degree angle. And you only have one spatial dimension, direction, that is the angle, which goes from 0 to 2 pi. So C1, C2 located there, and then R1, R2. Then in order to make C1 and C2 degree of freedom interact with each other, one possible strategy is to bring these two degree of freedom together, like at this middle point. Then we try to scatter them off to R1 and R2. But we immediately notice that we can go to R1, but we don't have enough time to go to R2. But then if you actually try many things, and then you actually notice that on the boundary, even though, I mean, on the bulk, it's perfectly normal to have the scattering process, but on the boundary, you don't have enough time to do direct boundary scattering. And this is a very surprising and it's very puzzling, because I mean, again, interaction on the bulk is something very normal, but from the boundary perspective, it looks very difficult, or it looks even impossible for particles to interact with each other on the boundary. Now, this puzzle can be made more precise by looking at the future and the past light cones, and here I just draw a red shaded area is the intersection of future light cones, and then blue is just the intersection of past light cones. And you can easily see that these regions do not overlap with each other. So this suggests that there is absolutely no direct boundary scattering processes possible in this configuration. And I can even further simplify the problem by drawing this causal graph on the bulk. Here's two inputs. Come together and then scatter, and then they can interact with each other. But on the boundary, what I see is that input points C1 and C2 can send signal to output points, but they can never come together and then scatter. So this on the right hand side is like the causal structure graph. And then on this graph, yeah, how come we can make like C2 and C1 and C2 interact with each other? It looks quite impossible, right? So that is essentially the puzzle Alex found. Now, interesting thing is that in the same paper where Alex pointed out the puzzle, he immediately proposed a possible resolution of the puzzle. And he proposed that, well, maybe a quantum entanglement plays a role of resource states in the quantum entanglement, actually. Makes us possible to induce such interactions. So let me illustrate the idea more. So in order to do this, he focused on the following diamond-like regions, this W1 and W2, these shaded areas. So what are these areas? So let me focus on W1. So W1, you can clearly see that it is in the future of C1, so input point. So it's like a region which like C1 degree of freedom has an access, but then it is in the past of R1 and R2. So you can still send a signal to the output points. But these are not in the, it's causally disconnected from C2. You can draw similar regions, W2. So the point of this W1, W2 are like the regions or degree of freedom which input information C1, C2 have an access. Now then the question is, what kind of entanglement is available on W1 and W2? And this is actually a very easy thing to compute. We can just use the Ryota-Kanagi formula and just measure the length of the curve. Then what we notice is that this W1 region and W2 region, in this configuration, they are actually entangled with each other because they are connected through this Niemann surface. This suggests that more concretely, if you compute something called mutual information, which is a measure of a quantum correlation between two regions, it is a huge number. It is inversely proportional to the Newton's constants. It's very large. So this means that W1 and W2 indeed are strongly entangled, and you can probably distill a large number of Bell pairs or EPR pairs. So with this observation in mind, I can further simplify the problem and then draw the same causal structure graph. But this time, on top of this boundary graph, I have a resource entanglement, W1, W2. They are entangled with each other. And the key idea is maybe we can somehow use this entanglement and somehow induce this interaction between particles. That is the key idea. But now, if we reduce and simplify the problem to this level, the rest is actually pretty easy, because somehow quantum information theory people in the past, like almost 40 years ago, they have addressed a similar problem. So indeed, it is possible to actually implement or simulate some kind of a two-particle unitary transformation by utilizing entanglement. And some of them can be done very efficiently. And the most famous example is the so-called B84 protocol. It's proposed in 84, and it is a cryptographic technique. And I will not go into detail of this protocol, but this protocol utilizes the quantum teleportation. So the idea is actually very simple. You have a state on C1 and C2, right? But by using this entanglement, you can do quantum teleportation. You can send C1's state to C2 by performing Bell measurement. And then you can just send Bell measurement outcome to output points R1 and R2. Then C2 has a sort of a, you know, both C1's state and C2's state. Of course, C1's state is a bit processed by Pauli operator, but you have access to two states. So you can, you are free to mix them and so on. Then later you can redistribute the state to output points. So this is how this B84 protocol essentially works. But unfortunately, this method gives us only a limited class of a unitary operator you can implement. But in a later work, people have found out that arbitrary unitary transformation can be implemented with very good accuracy. And then this idea uses something called port-based teleportation, which is like kind of a refinement to a more sophisticated version of the original teleportation protocol. And it's pretty new, well, like 10 years old still, but it's a new development. So at least within quantum information theory, there is no puzzle. If you have access to quantum entanglement, you can do any unitary interaction among particles. But I want to emphasize that, point out that still this protocol based on port-based teleportation is actually not very efficient because you will need exponentially many EPR pairs. But still, I mean, we know it is possible to do that, at least. Yeah. Of course, the efficiency is still an open problem. Okay. So this is what quantum information theory tells us. With access to the quantum entanglement, actually, even though causally it looks impossible, it's actually possible to induce interaction between two particles. Also, they're having a very beautiful development from the quantum gravity side, from purely geometric argument. Namely, later, Alex May and his collaborators have proved a very beautiful theorem, which in a very plain words, it says that if such a two-particle scattering process is possible, then corresponding boundary edge wedges W1 and W2 are always connected. So roughly speaking, this says that if holographic scattering process is possible in this 1 plus 1 dimensional CFD or 2 plus 1 D ADS space, then two wedges must be entangled with each other. And I'm not going to into details of how to prove this thing and so on, but their key idea was to use the so-called focusing conjecture, which is related to the energy condition of the ADS space. And it essentially says that shooting a light ray always decreases the area. Okay. So this is a very beautiful theorem. But in retrospect, sort of that this theorem, how the proof was written was a bit hand-wavy, and it's not very rigorous. So in our new work, actually, we have sort of filled in the gap and then provided the more precise proof. But more importantly, our new theorem in our paper actually works for multi-particle scattering processes. Like you have three particles coming together, four particles coming together, and so on. Then you will have more wedges, but we have shown that all these wedges must be connected. And this is actually a very interesting result because these connected wedges predict the existence of some genuine multi-particle entanglement on the wedges. Okay, so these are the kind of the nice development. Okay. So just to recap that we considered a very simple process like two particles come together and they scatter off to the boundary. This is perfectly normal from bulk viewpoint, but it's very puzzling from the boundary viewpoint. But from boundary, luckily we have access to the quantum entanglement that boundary conformal field theory has. By somehow utilizing them, it looks possible to induce any kind of interactions. But however, of course, I must admit that the story is not entirely satisfactory. I mean, if I become perfectly honest with you, I do not think that particles in the ADS space are interacting with each other because of a quantum teleportation or port-based teleportation. It's a bit, I think, gadgety or artificial. So we really want to come up with a little bit more, like, less unphysical protocol to do such interactions. And also, more importantly, these teleportation-based protocols actually turns out they cannot be used for the multi-particle scattering cases. It works only for n equals to 2. So for this reason, we really need to come up with a new idea. That brings us to the next, another important building block, which is quantum error correcting code. But I don't know, if you have any question, just ask me now, probably.
What happens if you take the flat space limit? Do you get the neutralized matrix or not?
Sorry, if you do this kind of thing in the flat space?
Take the flat space limit.
Yeah. So this story is mostly on, so far everything is on the ADS space. Furthermore, it's actually quite limited to the 2 plus 1D ADS space. There is some obstacle to generalize these results to higher dimensions, even in ADS space. But we have other kind of argument, which indirectly show that interaction must be happening by utilizing quantum entanglement, at least within negatively curved space time. Now, I do not know what kind of implication these things have on the flat space, and that is, I think, completely like uncharted territory.
Utilize the quantum teleportation,
or I should say the classical teleportation. So in this figure, probably I can describe it more. So
maybe Benny, if you have a question, can you repeat it? Because
the question is this idea of using quantum teleportation to implement interactions. How does it work? And then the point is, quantum teleportation needs to perform measurement and communicate the measurement outcome. And then one concrete way is that we perform Bell measurement at C1, then that will send the quantum information to C2. But the measurement outcome can be communicated to the output point R1 and R2 because C1 can signal to R1 and R2. So later, you can undo the Pauli operator that resulted from the Bell measurement.
Right.
But because of this undoing process, the unitary interactions you can do is actually quite limited. Otherwise, this undoing process may mess up the interaction.
I was wondering about sending the classical information does not affect my causal structure at all.
Yeah. So this sending the classical information is perfectly allowed because in the boundary causal structure, which is, well, essentially this one, you can see that C1 is possible to send the light rays to R1 and R2. So that is entirely possible. All right, any other question?
Sorry, I think I have a very basic question. But
yeah.
Just because your patch does not work after this time, could you just like glue another patch and keep going and go like all the way to R2?
I mean the puzzle is that on the bulk, in some fixed amount of time, you can send a signal to the center of the bulk and you can retrieve this signal on the boundary. And then it takes some time, and then I normalize it to pi, whatever. But then, because of the holographic principle, I should be able to simulate and see the same physics from the boundary, which should take exactly the same amount of time. So then, can I do that on the boundary? Then it looks like it's not possible because I do not have enough time to bring two signals from C1 and C2 together and then scatter off to there. So you can't really put the patch, and then that time is set by bulk process. All right, so let me move on. So, yep.
In the boundary, I'm not sure why a bulk scattering corresponds to a boundary scattering. I think in the boundary, shouldn't the corresponding quantity just be a correlation function, a 4-point function?
Yes. So if I believe in the ADS-CFT correspondence, which I do believe, if it works perfectly, then if I compute 4-point correlation function, then that should give me the quantity which sees the interactions. But why this is possible is really the question on the boundary. So somehow in the black box computation, it might give us such a 4-point correlation functions, but it's very difficult to explain why this is happening on the boundary CFT. And then the only possibility is that dynamically, somehow this inserting operator here and here, and then telling them to interact with each other on the bulk and then scatter off to the boundary, somehow this whole procedure should be utilizing somehow entanglement.
I'm not sure why do they need to come together on the boundary to scatter?
Why do they need to come to on? So you don't need to come together, and then so of course, this is not the only way to make particles interact with each other, right? Particles can get delocalized and so on. But you can think about any possible processes, but this is all what you can do, like future and the past light cones, and as long as they do not overlap with each other, there's no direct interactions. So this interaction should be mediated by something, and then the claim is that it is entanglement. Another way to put it is like, if I assume that this ADS space, the ADS vacuum has no entanglement at all, and we can rigorously prove that interaction cannot happen. So indeed, this interaction is really happening because of the underlying quantum entanglement.
This correlation function on the boundary is our time order.
Sorry?
The correlation function on the boundary.
Yeah.
Is time ordered or?
Time order, what does it mean? So you need to compute the correlation function, let's say at C2, C1, and then R1 and R2, yeah?
I'm just confused because like Schopenhauer scattering in the ADS, each boundary dual is out of time order.
No, it's not out of time order. It's just, it's very simple, right? I mean, at C1, I can insert a projection operator that corresponds to initial state of C1 and C2 and so on. Then R1 and R2, I can just put another projection operator, and then that defines more my 4-point correlator, right? I just make measurement. I can start from there and then construct more abstract correlation function, but it's time ordered in this case. Okay, anyway, so let me move on. So, so we want to come up with a more like less unphysical protocol. And then our idea is to use quantum error correction nature of ADS-CFT correspondence. So let me briefly review this notion of holographic quantum error correction. I will be a bit brief on this because I have actually given the colloquium talk on exactly this subject 5 years ago. but anyway, ADS-CFT correspondence again says that whatever happening on the bulk has a holographic realization on the boundary. Now, one very fundamental result in ADS-CFT correspondence is actually how to write down bulk operator by using boundary CFT operator. And the most famous one is called the causal wedge reconstruction. Now, in 1+1D CFT configuration like this one, let us imagine we have a phi bulk matter field operator, let's say scalar operator, field operator there, sitting at some point on the bulk. Then we will also consider a boundary segment A, and we are going to look for the minimal surface. And then you see that this bulk operator is completely contained in this minimal surface. And this region is, by the way, called causal wedge. Now, the statement is that if bulk operator is completely contained in the causal wedge, it is actually possible to write down the corresponding boundary operator, which are entirely supported on this A region. By corresponding, I mean that applying phi operator on the bulk is equivalent to applying this operator OA on the boundary. Okay? Now, such a relation is very, very fundamental and useful because it gives us a sort of dictionary or mapping of the bulk physics to boundary physics. Now, in order to demonstrate this idea of quantum error correction, we want to apply it to the following configuration. That is, I'm going to split the boundary region into three regions, A, B, C. Okay. Then you notice that this bulk at the center, phi operator, it is contained in the entanglement wedge of AB. Right? Oh, no, sorry, causal wedge. Yeah. Kind of similar. But yeah. AB, right? And also, it is contained in the causal wedge of BC and the causal wedge of CA. This means that the phi operator sitting at the center of the bulk has a corresponding operator, OAB, also OBC, and OCA. So that's what at least causal wedge reconstruction says. And then if you hear about this, then you might find it a bit puzzling that this phi operator corresponds to multiple different operators. In fact, this redundancy of corresponding operator was a source of debate around 10 years ago. But nowadays, we know how to resolve this puzzle because this is because of the quantum error correction property of holography. Indeed, this redundancy of operator is a kind of a signature or defining feature of quantum error correcting code. And this redundancy of operator actually gives you an ability to fight against errors and noises. But instead of going into technical details, let me just demonstrate one aspect of this quantum error correcting property. So imagine that instead of phi operator or this abstract phi operator, imagine that you have a qubit at the center of the bulk. And this qubit is some quantum state. Okay? And this ADS-CFT correspondence says that this qubit's quantum information is holographically encoded and hidden in subsystem A, B, C, like jointly, the whole system. And then if you have access to the whole system A, B, C, then you should be, of course, able to read out what was the original bulk information is. But suppose that by some accident, you have lost access to subsystem C completely. That is, you only have access to A and B. But still, in this situation, by measuring this operator OAB, you can still reconstruct bulk quantum information. So similarly, you can lose A or you can lose B, but it's still fine. So in this sense, this holography or causal wedge reconstruction already gives us a power of a quantum error correcting code, fighting against one erasure of a subsystem. Okay. And then this notion of quantum error correction and so on sort of improved our understanding of ADS-CFT correspondence and have led to nice development in recent years. Now, it's actually quite interesting to revisit this quantum error correcting properties through this lens of Alex-like argument. Then, in fact, so this error correction story says that sending information from the boundary to the center of the bulk is like encoding of information into a quantum error correcting code. But if you look at the corresponding boundary causal structure, then you notice that without the use of quantum entanglement, you can delocalize the quantum information only to the halfway of the system. But of course, quantum error correction property says that this information should be delocalized all over the lattice, all over the boundary. So this is another evidence or argument that this whole process of quantum error corrections and boundary bulk physics, so of course is and the quantum entanglement is indeed needed. Okay, anyway, so that's quantum error correction. So given this notion of quantum error correction, we want to somehow incorporate this notion into our protocols. So for this, it is actually better to focus on three particle scattering cases instead of two particle scattering cases. So again, I have arranged three particles on the boundary, 1, 2, 3, and then they can come together, and then they can collide with each other, interact with each other, and then they can scatter off to the boundary, right? Now, this is perfectly normal from bulk perspective, but now if I look at it from the boundary perspective, then you actually don't have enough time. Namely, you can't bring three particles together and scatter off to the review point. But in this case, you actually notice that 2-2-2 scattering is still possible. Namely, you have enough time to bring C2 and C3 together and scatter off them to R2 and R3. So by taking this fact into account, I can draw a boundary causal graph again in the following way. Then here I have input points C1, C2, C3, R1, R2, R3. That's same as before, but now new element is that I have these intermediate points M1, M2, and M3. This is corresponding to 2-2-2 scattering regions. Now let us speculate a little bit. Looking at the bulk physics, what we do is we send a particle to the center. Then at the center, at the intermediate time, they interact with each other. Then if this boundary physics is a holographic realization of bulk scattering, we expect that interactions should be happening at this intermediate point. Now, combining with this notion or idea of quantum error correction, then the story we hope or expect to happen is the following. At the beginning, we have a localized simple quantum information at C1, C2, and C3. But then when they travel to intermediate points M1, M2, and M3, essentially this local quantum information will be encoded into some quantum error correcting code. And then at the intermediate points, when they reach, they will interact with each other. Then later, they further time evolve, and then their information, encoded information, will be read out or decoded in the output points. So this is kind of the holographic scattering process, which we expect it's more like less unphysical. Now let us study the available entanglement nature of this problem. So we will need to focus on these three wedges, W1, W2, and W3. How are they interacting with us? How are they entangled with each other? Again, this can be studied very easily by using a Ryota Kanagi formula. This time we find that, well, again, that this W1, W2, W3 have a connected wedges. These minimal surfaces should connect these wedges together. And this is a very good news, of course, because this suggests that we have indeed some nice quantum entanglement, which we may be able to use to induce nice interaction of particles. Okay? But if we are very careful, then what we notice is that this connected wedge just says that W1 degree of freedom is entangled with joint of W2 and W3. In particular, if we closely look at this figure, then you might notice that W1 and W2, any pair of actually subsystems are not entangled with each other. This means that the state or entanglement these three subsystems share is genuinely multipartite, and it has no bipartite entanglement. In other words, you can't really distill EPR pairs or Bell pairs. And this is quite bad news because it essentially means that without EPR pairs, you can't really perform quantum teleportation. Because, I mean, if you try to perform quantum teleportation, then your teleported state will be further delocalized in an uncontrolled manner, and it's going to be a mess. So for this reason, because of this multipartite entanglement, unfortunately, we cannot use a teleportation-based protocol. But fortunately, we have come up with a nice trick to avoid this problem. So far, we have been considering an entanglement among W1, W2, W3. But it's actually, we should think about entanglement between different time slices. Namely, we observe that we can send degree of freedom W2 and W3 to M3, the intermediate point, thanks to this 2-2-2 scattering processes. Then since W1 is entangled with a joint of W2 and W3, we should be able to arrange everything so that C1 and M3 shares EPR pair. Now, of course, this EPR pair lives on a different time slice, but it doesn't violate anything, you know. But by using this EPR pair sitting on the input point and the intermediate point, we can actually do a better encoding into a quantum error correcting code. Okay, so as I mentioned that we have additional resource entanglement between C1 and M3. Now, without this resource entanglement, you just clearly see that C1 can send a signal to M1 and M2 only. So you can't really delocalize quantum information over three intermediate points. But with the help of this EPR pair, actually, it's possible to delocalize Psi1 information into these three intermediate points. And by the way, in quantum information theory, this idea is called the entanglement-assisted quantum error correcting code. The idea is you can achieve a bit more non-local encoding because of this EPR pairs. So by utilizing this EPR pair and additional entanglement assistance, it seems that it is possible to achieve a quantum holographic error correction nature, which was predicted from the causal wedge reconstruction. Now, by the way, I think it's probably interesting to point this out to some of quantum gravity folks. This entanglement-assisted quantum error correction is actually the same mechanism we use in the Hayden-Preskew protocol, which is a problem related to the black hole information recovery. The idea is you have a black hole, and then black hole radiates the Hawking radiation. So eventually, black hole and the early Hawking radiation will be entangled with each other. Then the idea is black hole and this early Hawking radiation, this entanglement is the resource in this case. Then you throw a quantum state into a black hole, you encode information into a black hole. But because of this pre-existing entanglement, what happens is that you delocalize your quantum information over early radiation and also black hole. This is actually the reason why you only need to catch additional late radiation only a little bit in order to reconstruct your quantum information with the use fuel into a black hole. So it's kind of nice that interesting that these physics are working in a similar mechanism. So just to summarize the discussion so far, what we have found is that even though it looks causally impossible, by utilizing the additional quantum entanglement that can be sort of distilled from multipartite entanglement, you can encode input information C1, C2, C3 into this M1, M2, M3 in a delocalized manner. Now, this may still look like kind of discrete, but right now we are working on generalizing this to a higher number of particles, and it seems that this kind of same encoding, similar encoding is happening. I mean, 4-particle, 5-particle, and essentially any number of particles. Okay, so finally, let me tell you how to induce interactions among particles or interactions in quantum error correcting code. So in our protocol, quantum information from the input points were encoded into a quantum error correcting code on the intermediate points. And all we have to do is to change the encoded information and mix them together inside a quantum error correcting code. Such operation is usually called logical operations because it changes the state of logical qubit or encoded information. So what we should do is just to implement logical operators. But it turns out in this context of the ADS-CFT correspondence applications, the kind of logical operators we can implement are quite limited or restricted. And it is restricted to the so-called transversal logical gates. It's just the reason is, as schematically drawn here, I have encoded initial input information, Psi1, Psi2, Psi3, into three parties, M1, M2, M3. But the point is, M1, M2, M3 are causally disconnected from each other. So all you can do is just apply some unitary, which has a tensor product over 1, 2, 3 regions. So in other words, this V1, tensor V2, tensor V3, that's perfectly legal. But the one I wrote here on the right-hand side, it looks very non-local, right? It's you cannot decompose it into a factorized form. Such an operator is not possible. So we are kind of limited to do this transversal logical operators. Now, this slide may be a bit technical, so I will go just quickly. But so far, we have come up with various protocols to induce various kind of interactions. First of all, we have found that the arbitrary Clifford gate can be applied in our protocol of three-in, three-out scattering processes. And this process requires only order n EPR pairs, so this is very efficient. Another interesting gate is like this phase gate, which has a phase. And as long as this phase function is quadratic, then we can do. So that's so far what we know. So there are some kinds of gates we can do. It's quite generic, but still not all of them. Now, as I mentioned that this transversal logical operator are quite limited, but this transversal logical operators plays very fundamental role in quantum information theory, especially in the fault-tolerant quantum computation. And there is a very famous no-go theorem due to Easting and Neil, which says that in a quantum error correcting code, transversal logical gates cannot form a full continuous group, and it should form a discrete group. So this means that as long as we are using this error correction ideas, unfortunately, you cannot do all the unitary gate in your system. So that is like a very strong restriction. But in recent years, in the past like 4 or 5 years, people started finding that if you relax the condition of gate being like approximate gate, then we can easily avoid this Easting-Neil no-go theorem. So there is still a hope. But what fascinates me is that ADS-CFT correspondence seems to tell us that this Easting-Neil no-go theorem can be clearly violated, at least what this holographic principle tells us. And we still don't know, but there seems to be a very clever way to avoid this Easting-Neil no-go theorem. Okay, so that's what we have for now, okay? All right, so let me just summarize what I have discussed so far and then what's next. So the take-home message from this talk is that because thanks to Alex's great work, we now know that interaction in the bulk ADS spacetime scattering process is somehow emerging from quantum entanglement. But we have sort of promoted this idea by incorporating the idea of quantum error correcting code. And then this allows us to go further to 3-particle scattering and 4-particle scattering, hopefully, and so on. And I want to emphasize that this encoding into a quantum error correcting code is possible because of the pre-existing entanglement among these connected wedges. And we have found that some kind of interaction can be induced, but we haven't found a complete protocol to implement arbitrary unitary transformation yet. Now, let me actually speculate a little bit. So here's how the holographic scattering works. I first prepare a quantum state on the boundary, and then I send them to the center of the bulk. But according to holographic quantum error correction, this is like encoding into some quantum error correcting code. Then we induce some interaction among particles by applying transversal logical operators. And then we let them scatter off to the boundary again because of this decoding procedure. And this will reveal the outcome of your scattering experiment. But this procedure is very similar to how we perform quantum computation. So in a normal quantum computation, we prepare qubits, and then we perform gates, and then try to perform computational tasks, right? But in the real world, there are lots of noises and errors. So these even a tiny bit of errors can easily ruin your computation. The idea to avoid these errors and noises is to use quantum error correcting code. Instead of doing a computation on qubits, we first encode qubit into a quantum error correcting code and then perform various unitary gates and so on by using inside a quantum error correcting code. And then later we read out the information by doing decoding. So it's essentially very similar. So in this sense, what we are doing here, scattering experiment in holography, can be maybe interpreted as a version of fault-tolerant quantum computation. Now, this may sound a bit speculative, and I agree with you, but in this context, actually, it's probably very interesting to think about the role of black holes and so on, put in the center of the ADS space. Because as you know, if you fall into the black hole, it's very difficult to come out, right? So if I place a black hole at the center where the scattering was supposed to happen, scattering experiment will fail, right? Because information will never come out. But in this viewpoint, putting a black hole is like introducing a very fatal noise to your quantum computer. Now, so in this viewpoint, introducing noises and errors is like heating up the ADS space. And then if you are introducing too much errors and noises, then it goes beyond the threshold and you are creating a black hole or something like that. So with this viewpoint, maybe it might be interesting to revisit the threshold theorem in fault-tolerant quantum computing. But this slide was, I think, very speculative. So let me go back to a more serious slide. So potential future problems. It would be nice to make all these arguments more and more precise and concrete. As you know, on the bulk ADS, we can consider any kind of Lagrangian. So we can think of adding more higher order terms, which will induce interactions. And then we can ask how to induce such a higher order terms by acting on the boundary CFD Lagrangian. And then this should be done in a way that it utilizes a quantum entanglement nicely. Another interesting subject is to consider the complexity of a task you can perform in this holographic scattering processes. And then finally, I think the interesting open problem is the so-called entanglement wedge reconstruction, which goes beyond the causal wedge reconstruction. Now, to the best of my knowledge, so far, we still do not have an explicit construction of operator beyond causal wedge inside the entanglement wedge. But with these ideas of entanglement assistance and so on, maybe we have a right tool, enough powerful tool to finally attack this problem. So these are, I think, interesting future problems. So. Anyway, thank you very much for your attention. Question? Yeah.
Can you go to the slide? Yeah. So again, a very basic question. What it is U123?
U123 is interaction among three particles.
What does it mean to be interact? Is it an S matrix? Is it a function?
Yeah. It could be an S matrix, and so I think you are asking this question in a more concrete and ADS-shifty context. So let me see. So suppose that I design my area space so that my bulk field is non-interacting without adding like M3 and M4 terms at the beginning. But then when they meet together on the bulk, I should be able to turn on this third order coupling and fourth order coupling and so on. I can make them interact with each other. I can see that effect by doing this scattering experiment, right? At least from the bulk viewpoint.
What would be the procedure I could follow to compute 1, 2, 3 given these interactions? What would be the actual procedure?
Actual procedure, if you are just turning it on the bulk, then you can just solve the bulk Lagrangian. It's very simple, right? I mean, you can just do the, hopefully, perturbation calculation works. But the point is that any tiny bit of the interaction is still enough to demonstrate these puzzles and the necessity of entanglement.
I thought you had a way to compute 1, 2, 3, this u 1, 2, 3 from the boundary, like entanglement, right?
Yeah. So if I believe in the area shift correspondence, right, we just need to measure that, right? And if area shift correspondence is working perfectly, then turning on this higher order term at this only on this bulk scattering region should have some holographic corresponding operation. And then the question is how to do that. And then, yeah, we still don't know. Yeah.
Now I'm a little confused by something basic. But because in the bulk you typically have gravity,
mm-hmm.
you are the invariant operators. But you were talking about putting in a gauge invariant operator, putting in an operator.
Like point and so on?
Pardon?
Like a point on the.
Yeah, there's no operators, you can stick it at a point.
Yeah. So strictly speaking, I shouldn't talk about these point-like operators. So what we typically do is we stick a line and then try to anchor it on the boundary.
Oh, so you integrate it over a line?
Yeah, that's how we could define it, for example. But this is called like a gravitational dressing and so on. And that's of course a very important problem, but I would say it's more. It's another fundamental problem, which, yeah.
In terms of extending it to other bulk unitary,
mm-hmm.
Is the problem that you have this exponent? You need an exponential amount of entanglement. Is that the main?
Yes.
Only a linear amount of entanglement.
So for two particle cases, we know this photo-based teleportation and so on. And then this allows us to implement arbitrary unitary. But the problem is that we need exponentially many EPR pairs. And at this moment, we still do not know if this can be done efficiently or not. And that's still open question.
Does it seem plausible? I mean, and if you could show that one needs an exponential, if you can put it lower bound, you are required an exponential amount of entanglement, would that be a problem for ADS?
I do not think so, because if this unitary operator U12 has a very, very high complexity, let's say, then I shouldn't be able to implement such operator instantaneously on the bulk when they just meet. So I feel that some of the unitary operators are unphysically complicated. For instance, yeah.
So that would be the way out you would.
That is one potential way. But it could be possible that in ADS CFT correspondence, depending on your more concrete context, if I look at depending on the type of the particles or type of the field, there may be a good, preferred type of interactions that might be possible.
In the scattering,
mm-hmm.
the trajectory of the particles is what's causing you the problem, not the kind of unitary that you're doing.
Right.
Any unitary, even non-complicated ones, which somehow would be difficult to reconstruct without point-based teleportation.
Yeah, so non-complicated one. It depends on what you mean by non-complicated one. But what we know from quantum information theory is that Clifford is doable, and in some cases, a little bit more than Clifford is possible.
And is that because of Clay's nice with ordinary teleportation?
Yeah, but I personally think that because this entanglement assistance and the relation to Hayden Preskill and so on, the way we do the encoding uses kind of random Clifford. So I think there will be a relation to scrambling. For scrambling, we have more new type of teleportation that's like traversable wormhole and so on. So this idea might be relevant. It's more, I think, related to gravity. But
so,
I still don't know. But,
from a purely quantum information perspective, you believe there's a non-local computation.
Mm-hmm.
You can do arbitrary gates. Arbitrary computations using only a linear amount of time.
That I do not know, and I tend to think that it's not possible because any particle unitary operator, there are huge amount of such unitaries, like W exponential amount of them. So some of them, if it's not possible, I wouldn't be surprised.
So about the like case of the black hole that inside of all. Question was like, so for the like internal against black hole, like there is a like well-known statement in like bulk shock wave scattering, 2-2-2 scattering.
Oh, you mean yeah. But this is also right. Shock wave scattering. Unfortunately, well, the signal will go into the black hole. So for this experiment to work, I need to place signals on the boundary and send them, and then I want them to return to the boundary. If you have a black hole, then
In the like picture, they usually go to the other side of the boundary.
Yeah. So of course this shock waves, S matrix, and so on. If I can somehow probe through this kind of framework, that would be, I think, interesting.
So probably your like framework is only like the 4-point function between the like inner product between pure state, right? Because in the case of
So I mean, yeah, mixed state or pure state, I'm not sure that, yeah, that.
So your electromagnetism also appears to apply to the thermal field that
would. Yeah, so I think the only restriction of this kind of framework is that I need to span the Hilbert space, in this case on the boundary. Then, so I need to do the scattering experiment where input is on the boundary and the output will be also on the boundary. So you can have a black hole, but I don't want to throw anything into the box. I can probe close to the black hole, but yeah, I don't want to lose. So in this context, actually, black hole is very bad. It's a source of errors.
I was wondering the concept of measurement-based quantum computation.
So is that?
I was wondering if the concept of measurement-based quantum computation, which can be thought of as a generalized version of quantum teleportation.
Yeah.
Word quantum scattering.
Yeah, right. This is a kind of a good question that I do not know the answer, but it'd be nice if I can try to think like this. CFT entanglement as a resource for measurement-based quantum computation, and maybe such a interpretation may be very possible. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yes.
One last question. Richard, you had some approximate transversal gates. So do your error-correcting codes
still error correcting codes after you apply this gate? I see. So even if I apply transversal gate, maybe I'm outside the codable space, but somehow if I can read it out, then it's fine. That's indeed true. So I do not expect like transversal gates and so on to be like exact one. Because from the beginning, this holographic error correction nature, it's approximate notion, and there are many reasons to lead to failure. Like if I put too much information, then it's gonna be a black hole, for instance. So yeah, it should be a approximate error correction, but yeah, I haven't thought much about this possibility of, let's say, code switching and so on. In this context, yeah, I haven't thought much about. Yeah, so I do not know the answer.
Okay, well, thanks, Benny.